On today's episode of the LTD podcast, I am joined by Tobin and Armin from Vantage Robotics. We're going to be talking about Vantage Robotics as a company, giving you an inside peek at what goes on there, what their goals are, and what products they have to offer. Let's not waste any more time. Let's talk drones. What's up? It's Chris, the Drone Geek. Welcome to another episode of the LTD podcast. It has been a while, but I'm excited to come back with another episode of the LTD podcast because we've got a very interesting company here that's being featured, as well as two folks from the company. I've got Tobin Fisher of Vantage Robotics joined with Armin as well. Guys, how's it going? It's been a while since we've spoken, but I'm excited to have you on the podcast.
It is great. I'm excited to be on, Chris. Thanks so much for having us.
Of course. Of course. I was excited when you guys expressed interest to be on. It's a company that I've wanted to have on for a little while. So really excited to finally be making it happen. So just to sort of get involved and get jumped in, you know, give us some background, first of all, on who you are. You know, tell us about your career, a little bit of history, a little bit of background, so we can get familiar with who you are.
Sure. Well, so I'm an engineer by training. So have a couple degrees in mechanical engineering and product design, and have been an entrepreneur for the better part of my career now, but have always been a hands-on engineer during that time. So I founded a micro fuel cell company out of grad school at Stanford that went on to become a supplier to the U.S. Army of a B-5590 replacement battery, and then started a software company. And the software company, I discovered that it's a lot easier to make money in software than micro fuel cells. But I really missed hardware. And when I saw the beginning of drones, that really seemed like a chance for me to sort of combine software, which I do really enjoy, but my deep love and passion for hardware.
That's awesome. And I was just about to say that too, you know, what an incredible amalgamation of everything that had sort of made up the background of who you are as a professional. You know, drones really do encapsulate just about everything that you had had exposure to at that point.
I've always been drawn to what I would describe as multi-domain challenges that bring together many different disciplines and can trade off between user experience, user interface, software, but with optics and RF and electronics and mechanics and vibrations and advanced battery technology, there are so many different disciplines that one can draw from and use within drones. And, you know, for me, that's just so exciting as someone that has always been curious and had a passion for a wide range of different disciplines. I think I actually was enrolled in 5 different majors when I was an undergrad because I was so excited about different options. It took me a while to settle. I started mechanical engineering and ultimately settled back in mechanical engineering, but by way of a lot of other majors in the process.
That's awesome. I think back to college for me, and like it took me a semester and a half to decide what my major was going to be. Meanwhile,
it took me two years.
So that's awesome. Well, so all right, we know a little bit about the man. What I'm really interested in, not that you're not interested in yourself, but is this company that you've built, Vantage Robotics. As a drone enthusiast, as somebody that is passionate about the technology and learning what it's capable of and using it out in the field, it's always exciting for me to learn about a new company. I've known about you for a little while, but I remember the first time that I was exposed to Vantage Robotics, I was like, wow, this is kind of a cool company. They have some cool platforms, and I want to learn more about that. So give us some background on Vantage, how it got started, all that good stuff.
Sure. So we've been around for 11 years now. We started back in 2013, and we originally started as a consumer, in part because we felt like there wasn't really the legal structure to enter the commercial space yet. As it turned out, we got to actually work with the FAA in order to create that structure a little bit down the road. But we started out with a drone that we called Snap. And the intent of that product was to create a drone that could be used in social settings. We looked at the drone space, looked at a lot of different applications of how we could make an impact. And within the consumer drone space, one of the things that we did is I asked every person I met, show me your favorite photograph, show me your favorite video, tell me about it. And I did that for about a month straight. And what I observed is people weren't showing me their favorite sunset photo or big landscape shot. People were showing me shots of their family and their friends and parties and meaningful moments in their lives that usually involved other people. And so we set out to make a drone that could do even better in that setting. And in order to do so, we wanted to make something that was highly portable, that was safe, that wasn't going to be a nuisance, namely wasn't going to be acoustically problematic, and it was really easy to fly. And I think, you know, at that time, everyone and their brother was starting a drone company. And I remember when we were fundraising, you know, everyone said, what sets you guys apart? And you know, the answer that ultimately emerged is we were one of the few companies who actually delivered against that vision and shipped the product that we said we were going to ship. You know, we, as has been a continual process over my last decade plus in the industry, I think we, you know, got served many doses of humility along the way, and took longer than we expected, was way harder than we expected. And probably the biggest dose of humility we got is, you know, coming to appreciate that while, you know, as a consumer product was successful, the innovations that we had turned out to be much more relevant in markets that we weren't really considering at the outset. And that process of engaging with the marketplace and learning from them really helped us understand where we could make an impact, and has evolved the company over the last 11 years.
Yeah, it's definitely an industry that will humble you very quickly, no matter what level you're operating on, whether you're a founder of a company or you're somebody that's just working, you know, their way through it on their own. It is a very humbling industry. And, you know, a question that I had as you were sort of explaining the origins and what the journey has been like is, you know, in your opinion, when you look at the industry, and this is just how I see it, I guess I'll share my hand to you first, is I see the industry as sort of a two-headed beast, in that you've got the industry, you've got the drone industry, the folks that care about the technology, that build it, that innovate it. And then on the other side of that, you have the adapters, the people that are taking that technology and deploying it for practical uses. You know, in my mind, I think that's the best way a company can operate, is focus on what you know you're good at and what you know you can deliver, which is one of the biggest challenges, is that delivering the actual system when all is said and done. But then discovering who your target is, discovering how your drone is going to work, what your drone is going to be considered the expert solution for, that really comes down to what the market, the vertical, the other verticals say about your drone, how they can apply that technology. Would you agree that's been the experience for Vantage?
100%. I see it as a conversation that we are having with our customers on an ongoing basis. And, you know, like any good conversation, it involves some combination of listening and speaking. And so I see the listening part as talking to our customers and hearing what they want. And then, you know, we take that and digest and then try to respond, not necessarily always with, yes, you're right, but try to empathize with what their needs are and build upon them with our understanding of what's possible.
Okay. I love that answer. I mean, it really does speak to, I love it for two reasons. One, it's authentic, but two, it speaks to sort of exactly what my perception of the industry was like, is that, you know, these manufacturers come along, they create a product for a platform that might be for a specific purpose, but it might be for, hey, you know, we want to see what people can come up with in terms of how they apply our drone to their problem, or what they're trying to tackle. You know, it really fits well into that idea, that concept. And I like concepts. That's something you can sink your teeth into. But you know, we get into those drones and we get into the development of them, and then ultimately what is the end use. But what I'd really like to know is sort of where Vantage is at in terms of the platforms that you have to offer. You know, what type of drones do you create? Can you give us some models, some makes, some names, something that people can sink their teeth into and go find out more about?
Sure, absolutely. Well, I mentioned Snap, which was our original product, and you know, that product over time end up getting the first broad waiver in history with FAA and CNN for commercial drone use for people, which I would sort of describe as phase two of our business, of that niche of using drones and that around people, over people. And then, you know, some of the innovations we made around portability and acoustics led us to getting a contract with the Army to make their next generation reconnaissance drone. And that is what ultimately led to Vesper, this drone here. And so this is Vesper, which notably should look very similar to what you see over my head. So one and the same.
That's awesome.
And, you know, for Vesper, we proposed that we could do some pretty audacious things. Mm-hmm. So we proposed we could make a drone that could fly for nearly an hour, be nearly silent in flight, see in the dark, have exceptional zoom, much better than ever been done before, all at a really lightweight. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think a lot of people were rightfully skeptical of whether we would do that or not. We did. You know, as with Snap, it was harder and took longer than we expected, with, you know, no shortage of challenges along the way. But I think, you know, when we did so, it definitely earned the attention of a lot of folks in DOD, who then were willing to make a number of other new opportunities for R&D contracts available to us, and really allowed us to build on the work we had done and continue to advance it. And so, you know, two of the advancements, which are, you know, we're now selling today, one is it's the next generation of our ground controller. This is our Vision 2 GCS.
I have one live open here, so you guys can see.
Even better.
Right? You guys can see what it does.
Oh, wow. That's
Thanks,
amazing.
Armin. And, you know, what makes this ground control station so special is most of industry has taken the approach of effectively putting sticks around a tablet. Mm-hmm. And that approach is, you know, has a lot of advantages, you know, namely, and it's certainly technologically easier to do, and is faster to build. The big disadvantage it has is, if you talk to end users, you know, what they say is they want something that's as small and light as possible, and is durable enough to handle everything that happens to ground controllers, namely drops, to be used in all conditions. And especially one of those conditions that almost everyone uses it in is outside in daylight. And one of the big challenges with wrapping sticks around a tablet is the screens aren't intended for outdoor use. They go up to about 600 nits generally. And so we basically had a really fortuitous advantage in that the person leading our program, BJ Sathakumar, actually developed the first Android tablet ever at Motorola. And so he understood how to build custom computers. And so we actually were in a position to build a custom computer from the ground up for the industry, starting with a 2,500 nit screen.
Oh, wow.
That was suitable for outdoor use. A processor that is, again, sort of well matched to the challenges, all of the AI expansion capabilities necessary to run everything you'd want to run on the ground from a software perspective. And then as well, the Android operating system that, because we were in full control of it, we could customize it as we needed and do things like have the screen brightness go down low enough to support using it with nods. Mm-hmm. And this is a sort of big emerging capability for us, you know, that we didn't maybe fully appreciate at the outset, but, you know, for folks integrating Panasonic or Samsung hardware, you know, as cool and big as the drone industry is, you know, the reality is we are tiny, mm-hmm, relative to the industries that Panasonic and Samsung serve. So they're not going to be customizing the hardware or the OS on our behalf.
Yeah.
And so that full control of the operating system has really also opened up a lot of doors for us and what we can do.
That's awesome.
And one thing I would emphasize for this product is, this is a product we sell both with our two drones. I'll be introducing the second in a moment, but we also offer it B2B. Okay. So we will sell it to our competitors, and it's got a modular radio bay, so it can be used to control a wide range of both drones as well as ground control robots. We've used it for controlling bomb disposal robots. We've used it for controlling all of our competing drones. And, you know, one of the things that I really firmly, deeply believe is for the industry to be able to be competitive and offer something that is, you know, equal or certainly we target better than some of the players, namely DJI, who have been able to invest so much, we have to work together and we have to collaborate. And so this product is really our walk in the direction of that talk that I know I've been talking for a long time about a way that we can collaborate with the industry.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think that you hit it on the head is the way forward when competing with the big guys like DJI, even Autel to an extent too. Their manufacturing capabilities, their R&D capabilities, they're at a point in the game where they're so much farther ahead that no one single company from the Western market can really stand up to that. But the one way that we can is all of us working together, bringing the solutions that we've maybe not perfected, but are close to perfecting together. It allows for criticism, helpful criticism, constructive criticism back and forth, and to refine those solutions and bring them to a level that then meets or exceeds those standards that have been set by the Chinese market, namely DJI, but I'll just say the whole market. What I really like about what you said and just the whole demeanor of how you've been approaching this from Vantage Robotics perspective is a lot of what you're doing is developed with the idea in mind of user interface and streamlining that and making that as convenient as possible. I think that's a mark that some companies, I won't say a lot, but some companies miss. And then they're sort of left scratching their head wondering why, there's not more attention brought to their platforms, to their solutions. When it really comes down to, it's not that they're not valuable. It's that it's too difficult to use. And so the idea of, hey, we've got this controller, it's not designed to the screen, it's not designed for outdoor use. How do we bring that up to speed so that you can use it on the brightest sunny days or, in the dead of night, if that's what you need to do. One thing that I am interested in terms of how you've developed your platforms, among the many things that I have questions about, but is that you keep bringing up the acoustics of the drone itself. So obviously we're talking about the noise that the drone generates while in flight. Can you give us an idea of what the Vesper is? What kind of output it has and, what people can expect when they put it in the air?
Yeah, it's inaudible at about 50 meters when flown sort of reasonably close to the ground, which is when it's quietest. Mm-hmm. Now, notably, Vesper for its class, we believe is pretty far and away the best. Mm-hmm. At acoustics, or at least was until we introduced Trace, our nano drone, which I'm is a whole.
We'll get to that.
Quieter than Vesper. I never really finished answering your question about our platforms, but is our most recent launch and probably the one that I'm especially excited about.
Okay. In terms of Trace, do we want to jump to that now? Or is there more that you have to share in between where we're at now with Vesper and where we get to with Trace?
Either way, I think, for just to continue on Vesper just a little bit more before we change topics, one of the capabilities that was really part of the design of Vesper is the ability to observe without detection. Mm-hmm. And so you ask it, how quiet is Vesper? It's that combination of the low light, the zoom, and the low acoustics that our customers really especially value. Mm-hmm. Is the ability to do that covert observation when appropriate and needed. I can tell you that has been used to catch murder suspects bearing the murder weapon. Mm-hmm. After a warrant was served. Wow. It has been used to try to find the shooter in Maine when they were looking for the shooter in the woods. So it's been used for some very meaningful applications that I'm proud to be a part of.
That's cool. That is very cool, especially when you see it, like the technology is built to make a difference. And when you see it actually translate to that and it makes the difference and it's a tangible difference. That's very, very cool.
Appreciate that.
So, in terms of, we've got Vesper, is one of our platforms here. We've already sort of spoiled Trace a little bit. Is there any other, Vantage Robotics in general, it seems like your platforms, they're not the big cargo payload drones. It seems like they're very much built for like ISR, data collection, gathering. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would characterize us as definitely a hardware innovator. Mm-hmm. And you know, one of the areas that we've really seen opportunities for hardware innovation is in making things smaller and more portable and less expensive. Mm-hmm. And you know, that smaller capability we've seen is really powerful in terms of what it unlocks. You know, the obvious examples, you know, that you see, you know, what has been done with compute going from desktops to cell phones. Mm-hmm. And it's completely different. It's, you know, they're the same fundamental machine, but the capabilities that are unlocked are entirely new and different and really expansive. Mm-hmm. And that's been a lot of our focus in our technology innovation, is unlocking those expansive new capabilities of what can be done.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, when you think about the computer that they used to send the first space shuttle to the moon, took up an entire room. It was running on, you know, kilobytes of data rather than where we're at now, where you've got a cell phone that fits in the palm of your hand. It's able to transmit data much faster and at larger volume. I mean, you're working in megabytes, gigabytes in a lot of cases too. So yeah, I agree. And I think that you're dead on the money when it comes to what we should be thinking about with drones. Now, this isn't a one size fits all. I mean, there are obviously use case applications where you do need a larger drone to carry a heavier payload. But I would say for the majority of users, especially users, you're talking about military, search and rescue, police, you know, a variety of different applications, as well as a lot of commercial applications. The smaller, more deployable drones are really the direction I think the industry should be heading on the whole.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's been our focus. How do you pack more capabilities into a smaller, more portable, safer, and less expensive package?
Absolutely. Absolutely. So now that brings me to, I got to ask the question now, talk about this Trace, because after seeing the Vesper and now seeing the Trace, I'm very intrigued. Both of them are piquing my interest, but the Trace now, I'm like, what's going on with this guy?
The Trace has been our, you know, passion and focus for nearly 4 years of development now. So this was originally funded by the Army as for their soldier-borne sensor program. And the challenge was to make a 150-gram drone that, you know, really had the capabilities of your average kilogram-class drone. Mm-hmm. And you know, I think Trace has really lived up to that design goal. So, you know, it's most of its specs are approximately what you expect to see in the 1 to 2 kilogram category. So it'll fly for up to 40 minutes. It has, we say in the specs, 2 kilometer radio link range, but we've taken it to almost 4 kilometers.
Wow.
It'll fly in 25 knot winds. It's got a gimbal stabilized thermal and EO camera with a 48 megapixel EO and up to 640 IR camera on there, all encrypted AS-256 communications. So it's, you know, kind of across the board, IP54 ingress, across the board, approximately what you'd expect from something in that kilogram class. But because we've been able to bring it down to around 150 grams, that unlocks a lot of new things that you couldn't do with a larger drone. So it fits in your pocket. So you can, it is, you know, radically more portable. Mm-hmm. It's well under the FAA's 250 gram intrinsically safe weight limit. And so, you know, that unlocks all sorts of both, you know, safe use around people as well as sort of changing who can fly the drone. Mm-hmm. And that it's also so much smaller. So it can be flown both indoors and outdoors. Which we know for especially law enforcement, something they're really excited about. You know, to date, law enforcement, they have their indoor drones and they have their outdoor drones, and they have to maintain those two fleets. They have to be trained on those two fleets, and neither fleet is really effective at transitioning from one domain to the other. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Oh, and then as well, you know, a lot of the costs related to drones do scale with weight. And by making it smaller, it also lets us make it a little less expensive, while not compromising on the capabilities.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, what really stuck out to me there was the wind rating on the Trace. When you look at how small it is, Armin at one point had held the case up that it fits into. Yeah. When you look at how small that is, and then you consider that it can handle 25 knot winds, you truly do have a solution that in almost all scenarios can transition from an outdoor flight to an indoor flight and vice versa with relative ease. That's really impressive. Those must be some beefy motors on that Trace.
There were a lot of design challenges we had to get through in order to make that work for sure, including motors that can have some, you know, ample thrust for sure, as well as a very slippery aircraft, a very stiff aircraft for the weight. Very sophisticated motor controllers. We've done a whole lot of customization and tuning on all FOC control. And, you know, that's a great example of, you know, one of the sort of many challenges, you know, image quality, acoustic stealth, flight endurance, that they're not the result of some aha single idea. Mm-hmm. It is a really smart and capable team working together really effectively across a wide range of different domains.
Okay.
In order to squeeze every last bit of performance we can through optimization and tuning of, you know, airframes, flight controllers, motors, electronics, aerodynamics, custom propellers, custom motors. So it's really an optimization challenge across every possible domain.
That's, yeah. I imagine that would be challenging to sort of bring all of that together. In terms of what you would consider maybe the most challenging part of developing a solution like the Trace, because again, you know, building a drone, I will say with a fair level of confidence, isn't the difficult part. A lot of people can figure out how to put the parts together to make a drone work. What's difficult is optimizing the drone. That's the difficult part about manufacturing a drone system. So along the process, what was maybe the most difficult part of that process of bringing the Trace to reality?
Oh, the list is long. I kind of think of it as a drone is kind of like putting together Noah's Ark, where you've got all these different creatures that have to coexist in a small place, don't get along. And then you may take that arc and imagine shrinking it down, so the hyenas and the tigers have to live alongside the chickens and other, you know, tasty snacks. That's sort of the challenge of making a really small drone. Of, you know, you've got these motors that make fairly intense vibrations that has to get really close to a camera that really doesn't like intense vibrations. You've got a radio and powerful processors that have lots of intense EMI that has to get really close to GPS, which really doesn't like intense EMI. You've got all of these heat producers like motor controllers and compute that has to get really close to things that really like to stay cold. And so it all, most of those challenges, they scale exponentially. Mm-hmm. So as you, each incremental bit closer, it's not, you know, linearly harder. It's going from, you know, 4 units away to 2 units away. It's not twice as hard. It's 4 times as hard.
Yeah.
And so I'd say that is probably one of the most significant challenges is solving all of those proximity challenges. Mm-hmm. I think of those, I don't know, I'm hard pressed to between RF, thermal and vibrations. I'm hard pressed to say which one was the most painful for us all to fix as a team. Yeah, it'd be a coin toss between any of those three. But
those are safe to assume. Those are the top three. Yeah. Well, it seems like just based upon what you've told me about the drone, I have not yet seen it in flight. I'd love to see it in flight at some point. But it seems like despite all the challenges, you've put together a system that not only meets expectations, but does exceed them. in terms of how that's being used, you know, the Trace, the Vesper, largely, I think most people have gotten the idea at this point just from the examples that have been given along the way. But, you know, flesh it out for us. What are some of the ways that your drones have been used already? And what are some of the ways that you'd like to see them used as you develop the solutions out?
So we target three primary verticals. Mm-hmm. So national security, first responders, and critical infrastructure inspections are the three areas that we feel we have the most to offer. And that's really through a combination of the capabilities of the aircraft and the fact that we are considered to be a trusted supplier for customers who care about the provenance of the hardware and software that they're using. And you know, I'd say that we've chosen those three based on both you know, where we feel we have the most to offer, and where we feel we can make the most meaningful contribution, to, you know, what's needed right now. And, you know, especially looking at DJI, you know, very likely being banned in the US and, the sort of massive need that will be created for those applications, you know, so I mean, we've focused on making sure there's options available for law enforcement, folks doing inspections and, DOD.
Sure. Sure. I think that's, those are great verticals for this particular solution. When I look at, the form factor, when I look at the size, when I look at really one of the most important things in the drone game is the sensor payload, you know, what's on board, how can that be utilized? And, you know, all three of the verticals that you hit, I think based upon the conversation we've had about those payloads and what's on board, can see great value in deploying your solutions that way. I guess the other question I have,
You forgot to mention the range here, which is a major differentiator for us against what's out there right now in terms of competition. So I think, you know, Tobin alluded to, you know, having different types of sensors, but we also have the Vesper that can fly up to 59 minutes, which in its class of, you know, the class of drones that it's in, I don't know, maybe you do, but I don't know any other drone in that same class that can fly that long.
Yeah.
And Trace, right? I mean, Trace, you know, with a small nano drone can fly up to, you know, 30 minutes with a standard battery and can go up to 38 minutes with the endurance battery. So those are staggering numbers for the class of drones that we're talking about here.
Yeah, no, the endurance is definitely impressive. Really, really like that you pointed that out. That was a good call out, just because you look at the form factor. And again, when you look at the battery size on the drone and you realize how much flight time you're getting out of the drone, it is staggering. And I imagine I can accredit that to, anybody can accredit that to your background in the fuel cells and how to make things go, give them the energy that they need. Can you take us sort of through, I don't want to over ask and give away any tricks of the trade, but can you sort of take us through the process of developing that battery technology out?
Well, it actually isn't the battery technology. Okay. We use good batteries, but our competitors use probably the same batteries. They're readily available batteries. You know, we've kind of dipped our toe in the water in using really exotic battery chemistry. And what we've ultimately decided is it's not worth it. To go there. They're so much more expensive. The supply chain is so much uncertain. The reliability goes down. So having had a lot of experience in very advanced energy solutions, I've come to fear them. And we've primarily focused not so much on how do we pack as much energy we can into the drone, but how do we use that energy as efficiently as we possibly can. And you know, that has very, very much been a obsession and a passion and a focus of many extraordinarily capable engineers all working together. It is not an innovation that I claim any personal direct ownership over. And you know, as I mentioned, it spans across so many different disciplines, and so many different disciplines have made contributions towards that. Starting with designing our own custom rotors that are optimized for our own custom motors that are very carefully integrated in novel ways, patented ways into the airframe, that are then driven by very custom and, again, innovative motor controllers to customized. You know, I've gone through the list previously, flight control software. And every step of the way, there are ways, if you look closely and are willing to dive into what components that I think a lot of companies in the industry consider to be black boxes. Mm-hmm. And if you're willing to dive in and unpack all those black boxes and truly understand their contents, then put it back together with a specific focus and customer need in mind, you know, there's great things can be achieved.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I think you may have just at least pulled the curtain back on the answer to my next question. And it has to do with the manufacturing. You know, you had touched on, you know, some of these Chinese companies are sort of on borrowed time at this point, it seems, just with the way that things are trending politically, geopolitically in the world. You know, tell us a little bit about the NDAA compliance. You know, are you blue listed? You know, what type of certification are you at, or where are you at in that process if you haven't gotten there yet?
Yes, so Vesper was one of the original blue listed drones, original five. Trace is in the process of being added to the blue list. We are just a couple months. Vision 2 was added to the blue list back in August of this year. So yes, it is blue listed. It is NDA compliant. We are very careful with our supply chain to make sure that everything is produced according to those requirements. We work with a number of customers who even have more stringent requirements beyond there. So, you know, we're in the process of making sure that the supply chain is really pretty fully separated from, you know, any countries that pose concerns or risks.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that too, because you know, without mentioning any particular companies, there are companies out there that will just slap that label on their product, and then it comes to find out down the road they're sourcing a component that's on a covered country, or, you know, whatever the case may be. So, in terms of manufacturing, are you guys open and willing to share? You know, where do these drones? Where are they manufactured? Where are they built?
So we have a supply chain that stretches all over the world, mm-hmm. With both, you know, sub-assemblies and, you know, assemblies made both internationally as well as domestically. We've generally followed a strategy which is described as an 80-20 strategy of approximately 80% of the supply chain we make in politically secure international locations with lower labor rates. And then we maintain a parallel production process in the U.S. Okay. That we can use for any requires U.S. only production, as well as just to make sure that we're robust against any supply chain disruptions. And then in addition to that, we have a sort of another parallel path where we have a production line in our facility. That production line has produced thousands of drones, and is certainly a very capable production line, but it is optimized entirely around tight integration with engineering and rapid change. Okay. And then we, you know, the goal is for sub-assemblies and processes to effectively graduate from that, what I would describe as a pilot production line. Mm-hmm. And then we have partners outside of Vantage facilities who are really optimized for repeatability and consistency. That usually comes at the expense of speed of change or integration with engineering. But, you know, once it's reached a certain level of maturity, that becomes, you know, the preferable approach.
That might be one of the more thoughtful approaches that I've heard when it comes to manufacturing. I mean, you've got just about every base covered there. You've got the lower labor cost, you know, chains that allow you to keep costs down for your end users. But then you've got that redundancy built into, you know, domestic, you know, parallel production chains. And then you've got, you know, in-house actually in your own facilities. Man, it sounds like you've built it so that no matter what happens, Vantage Robotics can continue to manufacture drones.
I think a lot about my my grandmother who used to take aluminum foil and fold it up and save every piece of it. And, you know, she lived through the Great Depression, and I think when you live through experience like that, you learn a degree of caution that you could only get through living through something like that. And, you know, for us, having lived through the, I think we look back on it as the Great Supply Chain Crisis. and the pain that comes with that. I think I'm very similar in terms of a level of paranoia that one can only learn from having been punched in the face 100 times.
No, it's that's valuable to know. And, you know, I do just want to call that out one more time, because, you know, if you're listening to this or watching it on YouTube and you are looking for a drone solution, you're maybe a part of a law enforcement agency, military branch, somewhere along those lines, and you happen to find yourself listening to this or enjoying this content. There's something to be said about that, because it sort of insulates Vantage Robotics from just about, I don't ever want to speak in absolutes because there's always exceptions to every rule, but from just about anything that could disrupt a supply chain. It sounds like you can absorb that shock impact, take that impact. So that's important, because in my mind, and you may agree or disagree with this, but the challenge for the industry right now, the non-Chinese industry right now, is what I call sort of the trio of success indicators. First of all, it's price. You have to have price at a point that is going to be attractive to end users. Do they even have the money to afford your product? The next one is capabilities, performance. Is your drone, is your solution, platform, payload, whatever, able to perform at a standard that's already been set and exceed that standard in some cases? And third is maybe the most important in my mind, is the availability. You can place the order for the drone, and the drone on paper can look fantastic and like it's going to do everything you want it to do and more, but is it ready to go, and can it be manufactured and out the door in a reasonable amount of time? And that third prong is maybe one of the more important ones in my mind, and it sounds like you've hit that.
It is a nonstop challenge, but we are, I think, in a very good spot now after many years of working through some really difficult times. The combination of COVID and the supply chain crisis. I could tell you there are times where we had components that you previously could buy next day from DigiKey for $2.50, suddenly become $500 components that you couldn't get anywhere. And we were redesigning the product in a matter of weeks to try to design out the component, or in some cases even pulling the component out from some other much more expensive product, just in order to keep the production line going. So I feel like it's very nice, and I'm very grateful for things being easier now, and I don't take anything for granted having been through that.
Yeah, that's important. So, and learning is a part of the process, really. So, one of the things I want to ask you before we sort of wrap things up, I think this is maybe one of the more important questions I'm going to ask you. It's also one of the easier ones. Where can people find more information about Vantage Robotics? Do you recommend your website? What about social media? Where can people find out more if they want to learn more about the products that you manufacture?
Our website is the best place. So vantagerobotics.com. I think the company is generally run by all geeks at heart, and our focus on any free time is usually primarily on the product, making the product better. So we've not been terribly active on social media or really marketing in general. It's been eager for us to do better, mainly just to share with the world what we've done.
That's going to change.
I'm looking forward for Armin's help and helping us do better at that front. Although I would say he is also a cut from the same cloth of geekdom, but we love that. But yes, our website is the place to go to learn more about us. And then there's ample ways to get in touch with us from there. And I think, beyond the website, the really best place is to talk to our team, myself, Armin, head of customer success, Pony, and we're always really excited to talk to new customers, learn about new challenges, and figure out how we can help.
Awesome. Tobin, Armin, I want to thank you for your time today. Remember, if you're listening to this, you're watching this, check them out at their website, vantagerobotics.com. This seems to be, in my mind, I've seen a lot of technology over the past 8 years of my career. I've had the opportunity to fly all varieties of drones. I'm excited to maybe have the opportunity to fly these two drones and see what they're truly capable of. But on paper, and from what I've heard and what I've seen in the community, it looks like Vantage Robotics really has a winning solution here. So definitely do more research. Check out vantagerobotics.com. Reach out to their team if you have questions. I guess I have one question for you, and I want to know the truth. What's going on with the drones in New Jersey?
Man, I wish I had something to say on that. I've been asked by so many friends who think, oh, because I'm in the drone industry, I should know something about it. I would assume it is testing of some new capability that folks don't want to talk about. And I can think of many good reasons they might not want to talk about it. But I'm afraid I have nothing to add on that front. I wish I did.
Darn. I'll just have to keep probing. I'll find some other folks that maybe will have a similar, who knows. But anyway, again, thank you guys so much for your time here on the LTD podcast. I can't wait to have you on, you know, excited to have you on next time.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Krish. It's been an honor.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yo, what's the fight?